led by the party and the Uhuru movement. The African People's Solidarity Committee is the organization formed by and led by the African People's Socialist Party. APSC is for North Americans or Europeans, white people, who recognize that this social system is built on the enslavement of African people, on the genocide against the indigenous peoples of this land, and on the colonial system which gives us our opportunities, prosperity, and our experience of democracy at the expense of African peoples and so many other peoples on the planet. This show explores a principled relationship that we North Americans can have to African people struggling for their liberation, and by extension, the peoples of the world. This show is about turning loose our whiteness and finding our genuine interest in finding peace on the planet through real solidarity with the right of African people to control over Africa and all its resources. On today's show, we're going to address the question of European solidarity. We often say in the solidarity movement and APSC that we are North Americans, but sometimes little attention is given to the European front of white solidarity. Recently, I was fortunate enough to be able to travel to Europe, mostly in Switzerland and Germany, to be able to interview a European who has begun the process of raising the question of reparations in the white community of his own country of Switzerland. Hans Fessler is a member of the Swiss Socialist Party, and he has authored a book in German that explores the involvement of Switzerland in the slave trade. I spoke with him, and he gave many answers and much discussion about what Europeans are doing to get involved in the reparations movement.
My name is Hans Fessler. I am a Swiss historian and activist, at the moment deeply involved in the historical research on the Swiss role in slavery and the slave trade. I have written a book about Swiss participation in slavery, and the book deals with all of the ways in which Swiss citizens or inhabitants of the modern territory of Switzerland were involved in slavery. It goes from providing the goods for the slave trade to investing in colonial companies, to providing the military means to suppress and control slaves, to suppress slave uprisings. Some Swiss regiments were very active in the Caribbean, also in South Africa. And there is one more element that I'm at the moment very active in, and that is there were important contributions by Swiss philosophers in inverted comma, scientists in inverted commas, travelers, travel writers in the development of racism in the 19th century, so anti-black racism. I have been a member of the Swiss Democratic Social Democratic Party for nearly 30 years now. The Swiss Social Democratic Party is a left party. In the French-speaking part, it's called the Socialist Party. So I personally prefer to call it the Socialist Party. I would consider myself a socialist. And inside the party, I'm on the left. And I've been active in party work for most of my political life. I was a member of the cantonal legislature for 10 years, so a member of the local parliament. The title of my book in German is Reise in Schwarz-Weiß, which is Travels in Black and White, and the subtitle is Schweizer Ortstermine in Sachen Sklaverei, which translates something like Swiss local meetings with slavery or in matters of slavery. The book talks about and deals with all kinds of participation in slavery, where Swiss citizens, inhabitants of the area of modern Switzerland were involved. This starts with producing the goods that were important in the slave trade. Switzerland was especially important for the production of Indian textiles. They were very light cotton fabrics printed with colorful motifs, and they were used as something like the money of the trade in Western Africa. So production of goods, investment in slave expeditions, investment in colonial companies. There were Swiss plantation owners in the West Indies, the Caribbean, in the southern states of the USA, and in the colonies on the northern shore of South America. So that's Guyana, Belize, Suriname. Swiss merchants were active in trading slave-produced goods. And Swiss consumers, like all European consumers, used slavery-produced goods.
Okay, so what led you to take up this topic?
It really goes back to political satire I was producing in 2003. The occasion was the anniversary of my canton, of the canton of St. Gallen, the 200th anniversary. And artists were invited to contribute something to that anniversary. So I started producing a one-man satirical show. And then suddenly I thought that this threatened to be very Eurocentric, very narrow, centered on St. Gallen, Switzerland, Swiss history. So I tried to broaden my subject, and I looked at what had happened in 1803, the year when my canton was founded, and I sort of stumbled on the movement of Haitian liberation. I had not known much about Haiti and the history of Haiti. And then I was fascinated by the figure of Toussaint Louverture, the Haitian slave liberator, and I got involved in the history of Haiti. I got into contact with Haitian people. I met in Fort de Joux. This is the castle where Toussaint Louverture died. It's not far from the Swiss border. And through that, I came across documents that proved that Switzerland was also involved in the slave trade. So from that, from the production of that satirical show, I moved to doing research on Swiss participation in slavery.
Inspired by what he read about Toussaint Louverture and his revolution in Haiti, Fessler decided to research even more about the involvement of a so-called neutral state of Switzerland, as everyone has always seen it, in how it was involved in slavery. And we know from the analysis of Chairman Omalu Yeshitela that all of Europe and all of capitalism and all of Western civilization is built on slavery and on the backs of African, indigenous, and other workers from around the world. And this exploration really goes without saying, but in Europe is very new to understand the connection of all parts of the society, not just the parts that are considered the main participants in slavery. So when the book first came out, he got some mixed reactions, especially when Fessler was researching his access of information.
Access to information was sometimes difficult. There were archives which were closed to me, or where the family that is still keeping the archives said, we're not allowing you to look at the archives, to look at the documents. In most cases, it was easy in the sense of that the documents are free or accessible. And when it comes to historical literature on the topic, there were some books that had already been published in the 1960s, but these authors looked at the subject from a different point of view. So their context was economic history of Switzerland, the history of the Swiss banking system, history of individual families, whereas I tried to focus on the issue of slavery and Swiss participation in slavery.
Fessler also found that when he decided to confront individual families who had direct connections to the slave trade, he had some mixed reactions.
The general reaction was quite a surprise to me because I had been active in the 1980s, politically active. So that was the period when the Cold War was still in full swing in Europe and in Switzerland. And in the 1980s, if you started to criticize your own country, people would always argue that you are a secret agent of the Soviet Union. You're trying to weaken your country in order to make it possible for the Warsaw Pact to take over and to invade your country. That was more or less the argument. But then, towards the end of the 80s, there was a historical debate in Switzerland on the role of Switzerland during the Second World War. Switzerland refused a lot of refugees to enter Switzerland, which basically sent them back to the concentration camps. And there was a big historical debate where Switzerland had to come to terms with its own past. Switzerland had to accept that the role that Switzerland had played during the Nazi regime was not one of gloriously defending the borders with a great Swiss army, but there was also cooperation with the Nazis, there was complicity. And I think that this debate has sort of paved the way for a new way of looking at one's own past. So people did not reject looking at it in the way they would have rejected it in the 80s, but I found that the atmosphere was a little bit one of being tired of historical debates. These historical debates had really set the agenda for a couple of years. So when I came up with my subject, reaction even among comrades and people of my own party would be one of, oh dear, do we have to face another discussion? But in most cases in the press and when I was approaching historians, archives, etc., people would say, oh, I didn't know about this, let's have a look. So in general, I found a certain openness, with a few exceptions. The far right of the Swiss political spectrum, they really fought against it as much as they could. When I came up...
But much like the analysis of the African People's Socialist Party, in which there is no real difference between direct and indirect participation, Fessler found that countries like Switzerland and Austria, which are landlocked and therefore did not send ships out to catch slaves from Africa, still have a responsibility.
With the fact that Switzerland had participated in slavery, people would sometimes argue in a way that they would say, well, just consuming cotton or using cotton produced by slaves wasn't really participating in slavery, because you cannot blame a Swiss citizen for wearing cotton clothes which were produced by slave labor. They would accept that it was much worse to own slaves or to trade in slaves, so to buy and sell slaves. They would say, well, that is participation, but then they would say there were only a few cases where Swiss merchants were actually involved in the slave trade in the sense of buying and selling slaves. And I think one has to see the slave trade and the triangular trade as an economic system. And it's just a historical fact that the whole of Europe, so not just the great colonial and slaving nations like France and Great Britain and Spain and Portugal, etc., were involved, but Europe as a whole, as an economic space, was involved. And I think it doesn't really matter whether it's indirect participation in the sense of that it was further away from the actual plantation owner or plantation overseer brandishing the whip. I think we have to accept that all of Europe was involved in the sense of an economic cooperation, and it doesn't really matter whether you invested. It's the same argument today we have in discussions where you talk about child labor, or you talk about boycotting Burma because of a military regime there. We had a historical debate in Switzerland, or I was active in a campaign where we went out into the streets telling people not to buy goods anymore from a producer of textiles, a Swiss company that had a branch in Burma, because that was a military regime. And then people would say, well, it's not good to have sort of slave labor in Burma, but you can't blame us just for buying clothes. So I think it's all a system, and you have to look at it from the point of view of a economic system.
Fessler speaks also about his campaign to rename Agassiz Mount, a mountain named after Louis Agassiz, who has a long history of imperialist and racist involvement in Swiss politics, philosophy, and science.
In my book, there is one chapter on a Swiss naturalist, a Swiss scientist, a Swiss glaciologist, Louis Agassiz. He was born in 1807. And in Switzerland, especially in Western Switzerland, in the French-speaking part where he was born, the 200th anniversary of his birthday was celebrated. He's considered one of the most famous scientists that Switzerland has ever produced. You could call him the Einstein of the 19th century. Agassiz was a geologist, a ichthyologist, a researcher of petrified fishes, when he was still in Switzerland. Then in 1846, he was invited to the United States for a lecture tour, and he was received with great honors in the United States, and he stayed in the USA. And there was one crucial meeting that he had in Philadelphia, where he for the first time met black people. And he sent a letter home to his mother describing this meeting. And this letter was later deleted from the collection of his work. His wife realized that this letter was compromising, so it was not contained in her edition of his letters. This letter describes the disgust he felt when black waiters, black servants served him in this hotel in Philadelphia. And practically overnight he became an adherent of polygenesis, the theory that there is not one humankind, not one human race, but different races started in different places. And he spent most of the rest of his scientific life, apart from creating chairs of geology and lecturing all over the country, to prove that black people are not of the same race as white people, to prove that black people are inferior, that black people are less intelligent than white people. He said, in his own words, there is a scientific duty to establish a hierarchy of races. And of course, in his hierarchy, the whites were at the top, and black people and Asian people were at the bottom. He got in contact with American racists who were trying to prove, by measuring the content of skulls, that black people had smaller brains than white people and were therefore less intelligent. He became famous through commissioning a photographer to take photographs of slaves. He had friends who owned slaves on plantation in South Carolina. And they're among the earliest existing photographs of slaves. They're called daguerreotypes, the earliest photographic technique. And I have used one of those pictures for the cover of my book, because those pictures of stark naked human beings that have been exposed to the cold eye of the camera are really very impressive. So, to sum it up, Agassiz was a racist. He was a forerunner of apartheid, because after emancipation, after 1863 and the abolishment of slavery in the USA, he argued that special territories should be given to black people in the USA, which was really thinking or pre-thinking apartheid. I've launched a campaign to change the view that Swiss people have of Agassi. They should no longer think of him as a great glaciologist and scientist. They can keep that image, but they should also be aware of the fact that he was a racist. In Switzerland, there is a mountain named after him called Agassihorn, so Mount Agassi. There are a lot of Mount Agassiz in America as well, by the way, in South America too. There is a crater on the moon named after Agassi, and there is even an Agassi place on Mars. And I am proposing in this debate to rename this mountain in Switzerland after Renti, who was one of the slaves that Agassi had photographed. And I realized in launching this campaign that practically nobody knows about this aspect of Agassi. But the reactions have been quite strong, especially in the communes in the Bernese Oberland and in the Alps where this mountain lies. They are accusing me of trying to soil the memory of Louis Agassi, to slander and to put a bad name on that mountain. And there was one interesting argument by the commune of Grindelwald. That's the Eiger area, very famous tourist area. They were saying that this was just a sort of a socialist campaign that I had launched, and that if one was looking at all the mountains named after famous people, where would one get? And I think it's interesting that people are becoming aware that one should look into the biographies of famous people very closely and find out whether they were racists or whether they were imperialists or whatever. And I really think one should look into biographies of famous people very closely and not just say they were great and they will always be great. So I'm quite hopeful that this campaign will get us somewhere in the process of rethinking one's own past. And the press has taken up the campaign, and there's a member of parliament from Geneva for the Socialist Party who has also submitted a parliamentary move into the Swiss parliament. So the Swiss government will have to say what they think about Agassi the racist.
Of course, we recognize that it is not racism, but imperialism and colonialism that is the cause of the problems of African people in the world and the way that this social system has been set up. And we also seem to recognize in the African People's Solidarity Committee, where most movements in Europe don't seem to recognize, that capitalism was completely built off of slavery, as Chairman Omali Eshitela teaches us, that the entire economic and social system that we know today has its origins in the slave trade. And in making reparations, we all have a responsibility, not just those who can trace their family roots back to slave traders or trace that their money directly came from some sort of slave insurance organization, but everyone, because we all live a lifestyle at the expense of the rest of the world that continues today. So in getting this discussion with Hans Fessler, he began to see also that there is a call in Europe for a more personal reparations movement, material solidarity, and not just asking for a symbolic check.
I think it's a great difference between recognizing that there is a sort of responsibility or even a duty in the direction of reparations and creating a movement in your own country. And I've realized that especially in the past 10 or 20 years, international issues in Switzerland and the Swiss political debate have unfortunately receded. The Swiss left and the Swiss political movements have become less internationally conscious over the past years, whereas in the days of the anti-apartheid movement, of which I was a member or still am a member, in the days of Solidarity for Nicaragua, etc., people were much more conscious of international contexts. And I think it's part of my aim with my book and with my campaign I'm running to bring back an international consciousness and to work in the direction of a sort of reparation movement that will also include European members.
Good.
I want to take a break here just to announce some events that we have coming up in the Solidarity Movement in the United States. In St. Petersburg, Florida, they've begun their Friday night film series. On Friday, they showed the PowerPoint multimedia presentation, an adaptation of Penny Hess's book, Overturning the Culture of Violence, and I imagine that was a great turnout. Next week, the 10th, there will be Congo, White King, Red Rubber, Black Death, which is about King Leopold II of Belgium's brutal 19th century colonization of the Congo, during which millions of Africans died in forced labor camps harvesting rubber for the automobile age, which we're actually showing in Philadelphia this Monday, August 6th. So this Monday, August 6th, at the Solidarity Center in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, at 7 p.m. for a $5 donation at 3733 Lancaster Avenue, you can come see White King, Red Rubber, Black Death and stay for a discussion. In St. Petersburg, Florida, on Friday, August 10th, you can see the same film at 7 p.m. at the Uhuru Solidarity Center, at 541 16th Street North, St. Petersburg. You can call 727-824-5685. On the information for the Philadelphia office is 215-387-0919. And the campaign to build African People Solidarity Day has started, and we are meeting weekly in Philadelphia to build our event for October 20th to 21st at the International House in Center City, in West Philly, Philadelphia. Our organizing meetings are every Thursday at 7:30 p.m. at the Uhuru Solidarity Center. That's 3733 Lancaster Ave in West Philadelphia. You can call 215-387-0919 or email philly_office@apscuhuru.org. That's philly_office@apscuhuru.org. Also coming up in Philadelphia, the Clark Park People's Flea Market is this Saturday, August 11th from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Baltimore at 43rd Street, also in West Philly. We're having over 75 vendors, all kinds of arts and crafts, books, bikes, household items, clothing, kids' stuff, great food, records. Don't want to miss it. And it's sponsored by the Uhuru Solidarity Movement to raise funds for African People's Solidarity Day. And you can get involved with us by getting in touch. That's 215-387-0919. Or if you're in St. Petersburg, Florida, call 727-824-5685. If you're in Oakland, California, you can get in touch to get involved with the African People's Solidarity Campaign at 510-625-1106. And, of course, the African People's Solidarity Day events in Oakland will be October 13th and 14th, and the events in St. Petersburg will be on October 17th and October 20th and 21st in Philadelphia. Now back to our discussion with Hans Fessler of the Swiss Socialist Party discussing the Swiss involvement and the European involvement in the system of slavery.
In the EU Declaration on the Slave Trade from the 26th of March this year, commemorating the 200th anniversary of the abolition. Yeah, I noticed in the language of it that they sort of nonchalantly present this that the slave trade is happening is concurrently with the Age of Enlightenment, without really the analysis that there's a connection between the two. What would your criticism be of that, if any, of how there seems to be an acknowledgement of the evils of slavery by Europe, but a refusal to acknowledge that the resources gained from it built this so-called Age of Enlightenment?
I have realized in my research and in contacts and in the political debate that there is a tendency to make declarations. It's become sort of, I wouldn't call it a fashion, but it's become sort of accepted to denounce the slave trade as a great evil. But there is a certain unwillingness to go a step further, and this going a step further would certainly, in my mind, mean talking about reparations, talking about the fact that the Age of Enlightenment, which flowered at the same time as the slave trade, really excluded African people, people of African descent, excluded women from the whole discourse on human rights and on the equality of men. Equality of men did mean equality of white men, of European men. It excluded women, it excluded people of color, it excluded people of African descent. So I think we have to make people aware that our civilization, as we tend to call it, or European history, European industrialization, as the Williams thesis has it. I'm a great admirer of Eric Williams and his thesis that industrialization in Europe was not possible without the accumulation of means through the slave trade. And part of my work is to raise the consciousness of the fact that Europe was literally built on the backs of the slaves.
Of course, we already know in the Uhuru movement that this analysis also comes from Chairman Omali Eshitela's work, and his work since the 1960s to really uncover that this system is parasitic and that this system was completely built on the backs of African people and workers, and that this system completely rests on the pedestal of oppressed people. So upon getting in contact with the Uhuru movement, Hans Fassler started to see that this was not just an academic question, but a movement, and a movement of people who really are working for their own liberation, their own self-determination. And he got into contact with Chairman Omali Eshitela and began to discuss the steps towards reparations and being part of the International Tribunal on reparations for African people.
I must admit that it was only quite late that I came across the writings and the theories of Omali Eshitela, but I've been greatly impressed by his analysis and by the clarity of his views on reparations. And to me, it was really a big discovery that there is in America a movement that has constantly worked in that direction, and I'm quite glad to be in contact with the chairman, with people of his movement. And I think it's really the only way to get further is to work in cooperation with researchers in Europe, people who research into the field of slavery, with people in Africa. I've also got good contacts with historians in Senegal. 2 years ago, I participated in a conference that had transatlantic echoes as a subject. That meant bringing together people from Europe who are aware of the evils of the slave trade and also what it means for today, with researchers from Africa and with people from the diaspora in the United States and in the Americas. So I think it's a good thing to be in contact, and it's always encouraging to see that all over the world or around the Atlantic, people are working in the same direction.
The discussion turned to talking about on-the-ground material solidarity in Europe the way that we do it in the United States. I mean, we have Uhuru Foods, Uhuru Furniture Institutions. We put on the Clark Park People's Flea Market in Philadelphia. We are on the ground every day taking a stand in the white community that we stand on the side of national liberation for African people and other oppressed people. And we work directly under the leadership of the African People's Socialist Party in a principled strategic relationship for solidarity. So we began to discuss how this could manifest itself in Europe.
I think The process is a slow one in Europe, but I think there are hopeful trends. I see that addressing injustices of the past is becoming an issue. I see it in Switzerland that even members of parties I would call bourgeois parties, member of the political center or even right of center, are tackling cases of historical injustices. I just quote an example. 225 years ago, in the canton of Glarus, which is not very far from here, the last witch was burnt, or the last woman said to be a witch was burnt, and now there is a move in Switzerland to take up the case again, so to reach a kind of rehabilitation of her case. So I think some years ago this would not have been possible, and I always look at these cases as sort of sample cases to be used to argue if it is possible to go 225 years back to rehabilitate a woman who was burnt as a witch in the canton of Glarus. We should look at broader issues, and we should take up active solidarity with movements that work for reparations. I am trying to put together a movement or an idea called RIMS. I've also launched a parliamentary move in the Swiss National Parliament. RIMS standing for Reparations Initiative of Minor Slavery Nations, so RIMS. And I'm trying to bring together political activists from those states that consider themselves minor slavery nations. I've argued already that there is no difference between indirect participation and direct participation, but by minor slavery nations I would define countries like Switzerland, Denmark, Sweden, Prussia, Brandenburg. They were all involved to a certain degree in the slave trade, but they were not major colonial powers like France or Britain. And I'm trying to bring together activists and researchers from these countries. I've already got a few together who would try to launch a sort of campaign. And the argument is that it should be slightly easier for those countries to address the reparations issues than it is for Britain and France, because if you follow the discussion in Britain, for example, on the occasion of the 200th anniversary of the abolition of the slave trade, which is 2007, there was a declaration made by Tony Blair, and if you read it, you find that the wording is very, very careful and is trying to evade the issue of reparations. So I'm sure a team of legal experts and historians worked on this declaration to make it clear that Britain is trying to come to terms with its own past, but not to go so far that it would involve material reparation. But I think with every declaration the wording is going one step further, and it requires patience in the sense of an injustice and an evil of the dimension of the slave trade. I mean, that we are speaking about four centuries or five centuries. We are speaking about something in the area of 15 or 20 million human beings that were uprooted and fed into the slave trade. So you cannot change that overnight. But at the same time, you have to be impatient by pressing for historical debates and approaching people saying that something must be done. I meet a lot of people in Switzerland, even among people who belong to bourgeois parties right of center, who would argue that at the moment most problems in the world go back to the actual president of the United States. And Bush bashing has become sort of a hobby of the ruling elites in Switzerland, and I think it's just distracting from the facts that we are confronted with a political system that is at work and that will not change just because the American president changes. It's quite interesting in Switzerland, criticizing the USA in the 80s, the 70s and the 80s used to be mainly done by the left. And today, criticizing America or the American system is so widespread that I sometimes, just for the sake of arguing, I take the opposite position and would say you cannot just be anti-American because you don't like the president, but there are very good political movements and strong movements in America that we don't hear of in Switzerland, and that sometimes gets me into interesting discussions.
In closing, I asked Fessler what he thought about a real on-the-ground reparations movement, making real organizing work for material solidarity, like the campaign to build African People's Solidarity Day that African People's Solidarity Committee and the Uhuru Solidarity Movement initiates in the United States. What do you thought about that happening in Switzerland? Switzerland is often held up as a real social democracy in Europe and held up as being a very liberal place and a place where they have this myth of neutrality and also this non-militaristic culture. But we know that's not the case. We know it's part of Europe and that it's very rich and very wealthy, that it's built on the same attacks on Africa and the rest of the world that everywhere else in Europe, the United States of North America, are. So I asked Fessler in closing what he thought about a European and Swiss involvement in the African People's Solidarity Committee.
To my mind, there isn't really a solidarity movement in the sense of African solidarity. The people involved in that sort of movement at the moment are mostly engaged or committed to anti-racism. There are quite strong movements of people who fight anti-black racism, which is sometimes rampant in Switzerland. And the other issue is migration. There are quite active organizations that are trying to fight for the rights of immigrants into Switzerland, immigrants from Africa, from other parts of the world. And I think if it is possible to create a sort of solidarity movement, it would be out of the people who are already active in that context. But I don't think it'll be an easy thing, but I think it's something that ought to be tried, and probably will be tried. Switzerland has quite a consistent and strong culture of the left, the Social Democratic Party, the Communist Party, the parts of the Green Party are quite active in the sense of trade union movement, of workers' rights movement. And at the moment there is an important debate on aid for developing countries in Switzerland. There'll be a great debate because Switzerland is one of the worst countries when it comes to the amount of the Swiss total expenditure spent on third world aid. Switzerland is still below the 0.3% that most European countries set as a sort of standard, and most countries, more progressive countries like the Scandinavian countries, have argued that it should be raised to 0.7%, which would mean double the amount, which would be quite something. So I think that would be a good opportunity to get involved, and there is a campaign on the way to raise this issue, and I'm also trying to bring in the fact that it's not just international aid is not charity, but is something that has to be seen in the context of the historical background of reparation and of exploitation in an imperialist context.
So Fessler sees that it's not charity that Africa needs, and that it's not what African people themselves are calling for. But still, Europe needs to get beyond the political aspect and beyond the academic and government aspect of the idea of reparations and begin taking part in the only movement that is available to work in principled solidarity under the leadership of the Movement for African Liberation, and that's the African People's Solidarity Committee and the Uhuru Solidarity Movement. So my own experience in Switzerland, seeing what could be done out there, certainly some of the material reparations that we do, the material solidarity that we show through our institutions, could be done. There are many, many outdoor music festivals where if we had Uhuru Foods booths, we could really win a lot of people politically and also gain the resources. And we also could see young people who already recognize that they're living on the pedestal and that their social system and that the system of Europe, just as the system of the U.S., is built from colonialism. The young people in Europe seem to really unite with the analysis but don't really have the solutions in front of them. And that's where the Uhuru Solidarity Movement could really come in Europe. The older generation doesn't really see anything wrong with the European governments, aside from those who are socialists like Hans Fessler, seeing a social democracy as a significant change from the more conservative regimes that exist in other parts of Europe and the United States, of course. But often they blame George W. Bush, the President of the United States, for the problems of the rest of the world, as Hans Fessler addressed. But there are members of that generation, like Hans, who oppose that kind of thinking. So, in closing, the Uhuru Solidarity Movement is open to everyone who is not African. It is open to everyone who unites with the idea that we need to make reparations, that we need to make a real push for material solidarity and really understand what our relationship to the rest of the world is. And how we can do that is by participating in the campaigns that the Uhuru Movement puts us on and gives us an opportunity to work on. And the big one, again, is African People's Solidarity Day. So our build-up for African People's Solidarity Day has begun, and you can get involved in Oakland, in St. Petersburg, and in Philadelphia. Or if you don't live in any of these cities, you can also organize your own events and raise funds and build awareness and build a contingent to come to one of these events. If you're in Oakland, California, or anywhere in the area, you can get in touch by calling 510-625-1106. That's 510-625-1106. Or email oak_office@APSCUhuru.org. That's oak_office@APSCUhuru.org. If you're in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, you call 215-387-0919 or email philly_office@APSCUhuru.org. If you're in St. Petersburg, Florida, you can call 727-824-5685 or email stpete@APSCUhuru.org. And the events happening in August in Philadelphia and in St. Pete to build for African People's Solidarity Day. Again, the film series, Africa's Resources Belong to African People Everywhere, Support African Liberation, Charity is Not the Solution, is kicking off this Monday, August 6th, with White King, Red Rubber, Black Death, about Belgium, the genocide that Belgium initiated in Congo under King Leopold II, coming directly out of the African Conference in Berlin, Germany in 1884-1885. It starts Monday, August 6th at 7 p.m. at the Uhuru Solidarity Center in Philadelphia, and 3733 Lancaster Ave starts at 7 p.m. And on Friday, August 10th, people in St. Petersburg, Florida area will have an opportunity to see the same film, Congo, White King, Red Rubber, Black Death, at 7 p.m. also at 541 16th Street North in St. Petersburg. The Clark Park People's Flea Market in Philadelphia will be Saturday, August 11th from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Baltimore Avenue at 43rd Street in West Philadelphia. And you will be able to meet us and get involved in the push to build African People's Solidarity Day at the flea market. If you can't make the flea market, we're having organizing meetings every Thursday at 7:30 p.m. at the Uhuru Solidarity Center at 3733 Lancaster in West Philadelphia. Call 215-387-0919. Again, this is about making material reparations and personal reparations on the ground, doing work every day to support the call for African people to control their own resources, to be a free and self-determining people, and to be liberated from the clutches of imperialism and colonialism. And that's our opportunity under the Uhuru Solidarity Movement to get involved and to be part of changing history and to join the rest of humanity. We say victory to African people.
We live in a world that is constructed of the theft of the resources, both material and human, of African and other people as a consequence of its existence. Stealing black labor, black bodies, black territory, of the rape of Asia, Latin America, etc. It's a rotten, foul social system. That's the world we live in. And if you raise the question of reparations, it makes it necessary for African people to come to terms with this. So much is done against us all the time. Demoralizing black people. You took my money, you took my resources, you stole every damn thing we got. I want it.
That concludes the broadcast day of Uhuru Radio. That was White Solidarity with Black Power. Tune in next week. Uhuru.